Jennifer Michelle has a Master's of Public Health, and she's also an EMT. So naturally, she makes her living as a healthcare marketing consultant, as president of Michelle Marketing Strategies. She's a podcast host, too. Her Leading with Health podcast features female healthcare leaders. In this episode of the Health Biz podcast, Jennifer talks about why she studied parasitology in Guatemala, her current work with health information exchanges and voice of the customer research, and her ebook, Marketing Mojo. Some of my favorite tips from that book are about helping, not selling, the wait and see campaign, and marketing automation. When she's not podcasting or consulting, Jennifer keeps busy reading about gardening and watching drawing videos. I'm your host, David Williams, and I hope you enjoy the show. Meanwhile, if your healthcare or life sciences business needs strategy consulting, I'd be happy to discuss. You can reach me at dwilliams@healthbusinessgroup.com. Jennifer, welcome to the Health Biz Podcast.
Well, thank you, David. I'm so excited to be here.
It's good. I know you're not used to being behind the mic, but usually you're asking the questions. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. If I get too hard on you, you'll turn some hard questions on me, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it doesn't happen. We'll see if I'm able to do this.
Very good. So let's just talk about your background and your upbringing, and what did you do sort of early life? What was your educational background?
Well, my undergrad was women's studies in Spanish, and that kind of led into my love of public health because I went traveling and got involved in a little nonprofit in Guatemala and started learning more about health in developing countries. And that was then what I got into, wound up getting a master's in it. And did that for a number of years before I burned out, though I think I burned out maybe a little faster than other people. But USAID contracts are their own world, and I couldn't take it.
No kidding.
Like, yeah.
So I saw you have an interesting background because on the MPH side, I saw you had a specialization in the time in parasitology. So it's like studying all parasites going around, or
Human parasites. So it's not like I know all the parasites of different dogs, but I mean, I love them because it was wonderful. You got to be able to identify them in the microscope, and you got to understand, you know, where they're transmitted. And I always remember this one professor saying, you know, the number one risk factor is children of dirt eating age, which is any child who's still crawling, you know, any child who's still, you know, digging in the dirt and playing and then touching their mouth. And that is how you tend to get a lot of them. So that is the funniest thing. But some of them are just beautiful. I mean, they're not beautiful when you have them, but if you're just looking at them, they're lovely. So I'm a big fan of the trypanosomes just in terms of their visual. They look like little rhythmic gymnastic ribbons. So you didn't expect that, but
no, you didn't expect that. But no. You know, I'll tell you, parasites are interesting because I know a lot of times, you know, when someone is going to the doctor, like a kid, and they've got some unusual stomach syndrome or something, and you know, thinking, you know, is it Crohn's or colitis? And I always say, you know, check for parasites first, because first of all, you can check it easily, and then you can do something about it. So it's good to at least be thinking about those little guys.
Well, actually, I find it funny because I actually do have Crohn's disease. And whenever something is wrong, and I think it might be a parasite because of some of the places I've traveled, they never know where to begin. They don't know. They're like, well, but you have Crohn's. I mean, aren't you always sick? I'm like, not like this.
Well, as long as you have Crohn's and you can still have a sense of humor about it, then that's good. Yeah, that'll be a separate podcast on IBD.
That'll be a separate one.
But yeah. So Guatemala. So I actually spent a little time in Guatemala.
Oh, where?
Yeah, I was in Antigua.
Okay, I was up in Quetzaltenango.
Very nice. When I was in business school, I sat next to a guy from Guatemala, and he's like, "You should come and check it out." And it was business school, so you're like your average peasant from Guatemala. He was like one of the few families that had all this sort of stuff going there. So it's a real eye-opening education to drive around with the bodyguards and the armored cars and all that. But I had a private Spanish tutor, and I was very gung-ho at the time. And so I actually couldn't just have one. So I did 5 hours a day, one-on-one, and it was too much for any one person. So I had two different tutors. So that was fun. So you didn't stop at the parasites and the MPH, because you're also an EMT. So when you had the burnout, like, can you go and like save yourself or give yourself a little shock with the defibrillator, or what do you do?
Well, you know, it's funny. I did that for 3 years, and actually my certification is just about to expire, and I'm not running with a rescue right now, but I did it for 3 years, and it was really just for fun. I like volunteering, and I thought that would be a great thing to know. And now I'm always like, you know, please don't anybody drop over in the middle of this meal while we're at a restaurant or, you know, while we're walking along. And I just, the funniest thing is, you know, my husband gets sick and I'm immediately looking at him like, am I going to have to call an ambulance? Am I not going to have to call an ambulance? And it's just, it gives you a different perspective. And then they all look at you and I'm like, you know, we're basically just here to keep you alive for the 30 minutes to an hour to get you to the hospital. That's the job. So beyond that, I don't have a clue. So,
Oh, that's good. Well, it's the sort of thing you want to be careful wearing your jacket or let people know about that because they expect a lot from you. My brother is a physician. And when he was on his honeymoon, they're coming back, I think, from London on British Airways. And you know, he saved somebody who was having a heart attack and prevented, more importantly, from the airline standpoint, prevented the plane from having to ditch somewhere, you know, to land and probably save them a ton of money. Anyway, they sent him like some sort of like a coupon or like a discount certificate for like the travel store after that. It was like the most insulting thing, you know. It's like, see, he did it for professional reasons, but he doesn't need like 20% off at the BA shop, you know, in order to be rewarded. So that was kind of funny.
Yeah. So, well, and it's also just funny because your perspective on, you know, when you're on an ambulance, when you look at somebody, when you're looking, are they ill? You know, you're looking, are they really ill? Like, how concerned do I need to be? Like, in the next 20 minutes, are they going to make it or not? So it's just such a different viewpoint, you know, when you have that in mind when you're meeting people than other people have. And it's just, you know, it's funny. It was a good experience. So I'm delighted I did it. But it's its own thing, that's for sure.
Well, it's better, I think, to own the ambulance company, especially around here. I know people could take a 1 or 2 mile trip, as I did in an ambulance once, and charge $5,000 because they can get away with it. So they do.
Yeah, well, it's not an easy business, and it is a business, like all of healthcare. So, you're the healthcare biz. So
absolutely. I shouldn't complain. You know, that's where I get fed from. Good. So let's talk about what you're doing now, and you focus on the marketing area. You've got your own marketing consultancy. And how would you describe what you do now?
Well, I do marketing consulting, as you say. I specialize just in healthcare. And lately, I've been doing a lot with healthcare technology organizations, predominantly healthcare information exchanges. Just for some reason, over the last year, that seemed to become a little niche. And also doing a lot of voice of customer research. And I think that's because people realize that something's not quite clicking and they don't really know why. And, you know, when companies launch, they often do a lot of research on their market, but it's at a very large scale. It's like, well, is there any interest in what this product is going to be? Will they pay for it? Can we afford to produce it or, you know, deliver it in that area? They don't really think, how does a customer think about it? What are the words they're using when they're searching for it? You know, all the little granular details that you're going to need once the time comes around to launch. So that's what I do. And it's not even often at launch. It's usually they've already been doing it for 5 or 10 years and it's not quite, you know, working, or they're starting to expand and they need to be able to make sure they're really sharp when they do that.
You know, when you talk about voice of the customer, it's a term I use as well, and I hear it a lot. What is it, you know, what does that really mean? And like, why the voice of the customer? Why not like the odor of the customer or like the sound of the, you know, like why, what
well,
is that all
that,
about?
The odor would be hard to convey and I don't know that we want to go there, but it is an idea. I think the voice of the customer, because what you want is the way they talk about things. Because when you look at marketing, you're talking to people. It's really just a written or a video version of a sales conversation. Now, it might not be the first sales conversation. It might just be a very, very high level. No, you should, you know, look into this this topic, or did you know about this going on in this industry? But it's a conversation. And to be able to get somebody interested in something you're doing, I think it's much easier to get in the conversation that's already in their head instead of trying to interest them in something in your head. And so then you need to find out. I mean, oftentimes the word choices they use are very different than the word choices you would use. And especially as they are just beginning to learn about whatever it is that you offer, they don't know all the different features to ask for. They don't know all the things. And it's, you know, it's like anything else. You don't know what you don't know. So they're not going to appreciate when you tell them about it. They're just going to feel overwhelmed. And you might not understand just how basic their beginning level is, but you need to be able to talk to it. It also tells you what they really value. You know, if you think they are going to love you because you're so quick to respond and they're like, you know, I just want something that doesn't break, you're talking, you know, with the wrong message and that will fall flat.
So what would be a kind of example of a type of organization you would work with? Do you have a particular focus of client who would be typical to engage?
Well, my focus with women is with the podcast.
Got it.
And that is because when I first started, it's really gone through quite a morph over the last few years. When it started, I was really just talking about healthcare marketing. And as much as I love doing healthcare marketing, I found I did not love just talking about it.
Yeah.
And it didn't sound any different than a lot of other podcasts. So I started thinking, well, what if I just interview people who are running different businesses or doing different research? And without realizing it, I wound up doing a lot with different women. And I thought, you know what, why not just interview women? Because there aren't a lot of avenues where you find women CEOs or women leading scientists and all of that. So that's what I do there. With my clients, obviously, I don't care if they're male or female or anything else. That's irrelevant. I just like them to be in the healthcare world because that's what I understand.
Got it. All right. So so on the health information exchanges, what's going on in that world? You know, it's certainly been the kind of thing that we've been talking about for a long time. And I think when electronic medical records were first started to be put in, everybody's looking at, you know, interoperability as a real reason to have them. And there were, you know, various names of things before they started calling them HIEs. There were, you know, there were other terms. And I know there are different levels of development and different levels of federal and state support. But what's the current state?
Well, what I am finding, and obviously I'm not involved with all of them, but as the regulations change, some of them are finding that they're expanding or that some of their previous HIEs in their state have disappeared and they're going to take over that area. And as they get bigger, they need to be able to speak more succinctly. Or what's happened is a lot of players, but not all the players in their area, have joined. And then they want to be able to woo the larger players or the, you know, most key gaps in their participation. And that is something they need to do. Or maybe they're offering more possibilities. So it's, I think as we move more into this digital world, people are very comfortable with the idea of, I want to be able to find it online. I need to be able to see it here. And it all needs to, you know, as you say, be interoperable. But it doesn't mean they can explain it. And in my opinion, HIEs tend to have a very clunky approach to communicating what they do. And they fall into the trap that you see a lot in any kind of healthcare technology company, which is they talk a lot about the features. And every single thing is a feature. And I'm like, I just don't believe that the people joining really see alerts as a separate feature from your, you know, being able to view the patient history. I'm sure they see it as one big tool and they set it up in different ways. But I find it very common for HIEs to break it all down into separate things and then talk about them like they're all individual products. And so we try and work around that. I also find that they also, and this again, I see this in all healthcare technology companies I've ever worked with. They focus so much on the details, they're not wooing the customer. You know, so they're not really talking about, you know, how it helps them or using the stories. The HIE stories are incredible about, you know, we got this information at an ER at, you know, in the middle of the night. So when this person came in, they could find this information and save their life. I mean, they have wonderful stories, but that gets buried in the, ooh, we can get you an alert. We can notify you. So that's why voice of customer is important.
No, that makes sense. And I wonder, you know, one of the things I also see in healthcare technology companies and a lot of healthcare organizations is they don't want to hear about marketing. So are you allowed to call it marketing or do they want to put it in some other kind of bucket and call it something more technical?
So far, no one's had a problem with marketing, which is good because it's in my business name. So they kind of, it's Michelle Marketing Strategy. So what are they going to do?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe it's a biased sample that way. The other ones, they don't need it. But yeah, that's interesting, the whole feature thing. And you can be completely, you know, look at one of these eye charts with all the different features checked off and then say, what does that check mark mean anyway? And what am I going to do with it? So it sounds like it's a fertile territory for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So Jennifer, I have to tell you, I won't say hate is too strong a word, but I really don't like books about authors and movies about the movie business. And so it should mean I don't like podcasts about podcasting or podcasters, but here we are, two podcasters. And so I am interested in your podcast, Leading with Health. What's the niche? You said it sounds like it's evolved a bit, but you know, but what's the history of it? How did you start it? And you know, where is it gone?
Well, I mean, I started it really to be a funnel, like a thought leadership funnel for my own consulting company. And I mean, I still think it functions as that, but I think it's in a more indirect way, because now I really focus on social justice issues through a lens of healthcare. And I think that's my public health background coming through, is I'm like, look, health is about not just healthcare delivery, it's about the bigger, broader issues. And that's just a personal interest of mine. So this way, I can kind of keep my hand in public health and keep on top of the latest things and still bring it into my daily life. So I love that. And honestly, there is not a single issue on the planet right now that doesn't eventually boil down into healthcare. So yeah, it's a wonderful prism to talk about all kinds of things. So for instance, my interview that just came out this week is with Dr. Shauna Swan, and she has been leading the research for the last 20, 30 years on phthalates in the environment, which are from all these soft plastics, and right, they are endocrine disruptors, and they're having huge impacts on sperm counts and reproductive health, and it's a huge issue. And I love talking about it. And it is that perfect blend between, you know, how are we living our lives and what's happening to our health. So that to me makes it a great podcast. But we also talk, like I interviewed Tara Davis, who talked a lot about how COVID impacted healthcare technology usage, because the pandemic, as awful as it was, really, you know, saw a huge uptake in telemedicine usage and this move very quickly into more of a digital world for healthcare, which I think is a tremendous benefit, but it took quite a shove to get us there.
No kidding. It probably wasn't worth having a pandemic just to have that that realization, but there we are.
Well, silver linings are all you get sometimes.
That's right. So where do you find your guests?
I originally just started, finding people on LinkedIn and reaching out. And now I tend to ask everyone to refer me to a few other people. And so I do that, but I do a mix. And sometimes they reach out to me at this stage and they'll say, you know, I'm publishing a book and, you know, would you want to talk with me? Or we had the Indiana Museum reach out because they put on an amazing exhibition on opioid use. And so that'll be coming out in the next few weeks. But it's all random, but they reached out and I was like, a museum? Why? And then I learned about it. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. That's awesome.
No, that's good. Well, I had started blogging back in around 2005 and I did podcast interviews from around 07 or so. And I assumed everything was going to go to video, but then lo and behold, people want to hear podcasts. So I kind of reemphasized that and broke out the Health Biz podcast as separate from the Health Business blog. And you know, here we go. Did you ever think of interviewing any of your parasites from the old days? I guess they have to give a pretty good microphone for them. Do they make noises?
Not that I've noticed. Well, they make you make noises, but I guess that's a different thing.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe I should look up some leading parasitologists. I don't know. I hadn't thought about it.
It could be an interesting area.
Always. Yeah. Always.
So any, anything sort of surprising? I mean, obviously you learn from guests, but sounds like the podcast is more of like an indirect marketing tool for you. But anything else you've kind of gotten out of doing podcasting, would you say?
Well, I think you get an ease with conversation because, I mean, and I'm sure you're the same. You know, I'm obviously a talker by nature. I don't think you go into podcasting if you're not. And in fact, one of the reasons I chose it over for, like you said, video is not just because podcasts are growing in popularity, but I do not have great lighting near my desk. So it was like, I can talk and I don't have great lighting. That sounds like a podcast. So, and one thing I've just learned is, you know, you have to just know so many details for everything you need to do, you know, with the editing and the sound quality. And that's always my big thing is I've tried different microphones and, you know where I'm going to record and all these different things, just trying to get that in shape. So that's maybe the main thing I've learned. Other than that, it's just meeting new people.
Yeah. So based on your limited experience here on this podcast, do you like hosting or being a guest better?
You know, both are fun. It's more relaxing to be the guest, but the host, you know, because you're kind of like keeping track of the time and you want to make sure the recording's coming through and you want to do a sound check and, you know, you're hoping the other person has decent sound quality. And if they don't, there's nothing you can do about it. What are you going to do? So it's more fun for me right now today, I think.
So Jennifer, as I was getting ready for this podcast, I went and I downloaded your new, I don't know if it's new, but it looked new. Your new book, Marketing Mojo, and the subtitle, I think, is To Grow Your Healthcare Business to Dizzying Heights. Luckily, I'm sitting down because I don't like to get dizzy and fall over. But I want to ask you about a couple things on that one. I thought they were interesting.
Okay, bring it on.
It's not a you know, it's not a, I'm not trying to nail you on a quiz. I just want to understand better what you're, okay, what you're saying. So, one is you talk about in healthcare marketing that it's about helping and not selling.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Well, I think that healthcare has to be about health first. Yes, it's a business, but if it is a business first, I think we failed. And that's my public health background coming right at you. I think that we have to help one another. And I also will tell you that I don't care what you're selling, even if you're selling widgets or shoes or whatever. I honestly think helping is the best perspective to sell anything. But in healthcare, I think if you don't, I think it's a total fail because it's just, it is what it is. So I think when you're talking marketing, you have to think about who is going to want to use this, what are their struggles, and how can I help them and approach it that way? And I, again, as I hear myself say that, I would say I can't imagine anything I'd be selling, you know, from shoelaces to soap, that I wouldn't approach it that way. But I think in healthcare, it's such oftentimes gut-wrenching issues that you have to understand that. Like I've had a number of clients in the rare disease world, and you have to think about, you're talking about really, really painful issues. You're talking to parents of children who've, you know, they've just found diagnosed with something that could be fatal, could be just very life-changing. And yet you still have to present it in a way that is what they want to hear and is going to help them through that. And it's, you know, it takes some finesse. So you have to think about it as what would be most helpful? What is missing here that they would be looking for?
You know, in healthcare, they have such a thing as watchful waiting. A lot of times you hear about it with prostate cancer, and they say, you know, I don't want to be too aggressive, and we'll sort of wait and see. Now, you have something, you said the wait and see campaign for healthcare marketing. What is that? Is that the same thing as like watching somebody's prostate?
Well, I never thought about it that way, but it might be. This is something I've seen when I was marketing director at Open Tempo. They had some large competitors, and there were things that, you know, this small company that I worked for could do better, but other people would not know about that. You know, the customer, you do our best to let them know, but sometimes they're like, you know, this other bigger company I've heard of, and I'm going to go with them. So we would, you know, be gracious and make a note and check back in a year. Because that's usually how long it took. And this is just for that particular company to find out, you know, actually, this isn't working so well. And we do want something better. And that was when we could kind of swoop back in and maybe reclaim that potential customer. So I do think a wait and see attitude, especially, you know, there's such a long sales cycle in health that, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily even think a year is that long to wait anyway.
Right.
So, and if it's from maybe taking, you know, all that time that you invested in, it's just considered a loss to maybe, you know, gaining it back. I don't know why you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, no, it sounds, I think you're right. You know, sometimes in consulting, we use the term self-discovered logic, meaning you can't cram something down somebody's throat and expect them to listen to it and understand it. So they have to understand that, no, in fact, you know, that big brand name isn't going to actually be that helpful to you. Mm-hmm. And it's better to go with the smaller guy that might be your client. So, all right, I like that one.
Exactly. And yeah, once they discover it on their own, you know, then they don't feel like you're giving them a sales pitch.
Now, you mentioned also something that I think is tied into the voice of the customer, which is about spend a day with your customers. And do you mean that literally?
Well, I used to, but now there's a pandemic. So
yeah.
So I don't now. Now it's nice if you can maybe do a Zoom next to them for an hour or so and see what's really happening at their desk. But yeah, I mean, ideally, when things are in a vaccinated world, I don't know. Well, let's hope we get back to that. I used to very much say, yes, go down there in person and spend a day with them and see, because there's nothing like getting how many people are coming through or how backlogged the emergency room is or what, you know, what is going on with their scheduling system. There's nothing like seeing it to get it, because healthcare is such a unique environment, you know? So unless you are a doctor or a nurse, you're not going to really understand it. And even if you are, if you're in a different specialty, you might miss some of the nuances in this specialty.
Now, speaking about understanding, you also have a maxim that says understandable is better than catchy.
Yeah. You know, I think Apple...
Can you have both?
Well, you can, but it's hard. And I think I think Apple kind of did everyone a disservice by being so catchy and so intriguing that everybody thinks that's what you have to be in marketing. And the thing is, we're not all that good. You know, not everybody can come up with that for every product. And you know, I don't know that Steve Jobs could except for Apple. You know, I don't know that he could for shoes or an x-ray machine or something. So I think it's better to realize you just want to communicate. You know, you just want to communicate what is really the most important thing and what they want to know about it. So when you take that pressure off, you don't need to be catchy. You can really just communicate simply. And simple often becomes catchy, but it doesn't have the pressure on it.
Got it. And the final one I'll ask you about, and there's a bunch more in the, you know, in the book, but I just wanted to, you know, I didn't, by the way, for the listeners, I didn't prep her on it ahead of time. So she's clearly read the book and written it. But marketing automation, you have some things to say about that. And that's a little different from some of these other things. Are you a fan of marketing automation? What's its role?
Marketing automation is fantastic when used correctly. It helps you get systems set up so that when somebody goes and downloads something on your site, another follow-up email immediately goes out, or another offer, or they wind up getting your newsletter, or all these things that if you didn't have it happening automatically would drive you crazy and you wouldn't get any work done besides that. So I definitely think it's wonderful. I also think you can use it, you know, to really narrow your list into specific segments so that you can send maybe a specific kind of offer or specific information or a webinar invite to one group over another. You can put different things on your website based on what they're seeing. I mean, there's so many possibilities.
Great. So now I'm going to turn from what you've been writing to what you've been reading. And I ask this question of everybody that I speak with. I'm interested in the answers, which is, you know, any favorite books, any books that you've been reading lately or want to be reading?
Well, you know, we recently moved. So and I still haven't unpacked my books for reasons that I just still blow my mind because I'm not usually like that. But I hate to say it, I'm reading mainly gardening books. And when I'm not reading gardening books, I'm taking up a new hobby. So I'm watching drawing videos. So that is my little world right now. If I'm not doing healthcare or podcasting, I'm thinking about gardening and I'm learning how to draw. So that's the main thing. So that's my world.
But it all sounds good. So you're keeping yourself dizzyingly busy. You know, on the gardening side, I saw this term backyarding, which you're talking about that, you know, with the pandemic, once it's done, people still may do more activities out in their backyard. And so, I mean, it was a pitch for, you know, maybe it ties in with the drawing. You're drawing like a plan for your yard and you can, you know, do some gardening and have some activities out in the backyard or the front yard as far as I
know. Could. You know? Well, we now need to because we did a little remodeling work that we didn't realize was going to require a backhoe going through our front yard. So we got to fix that. Yeah, oops. It was like jaw dropping. Like, what is, oh, look at that go by. Okay. So, but we're doing kind of a native habitat restoration. So that's what I've been reading a lot about is how do you get a lawn to go back to whatever wild flowers and bees and all of that used to be there. So that's what we're trying to do.
All right. Well, good luck. Well, we'll do a video. We'll need a video for that one. Or maybe you can just sketch it out once it's done. We'll do a follow-up in about a year. That'll be our wait and see on the garden.
Absolutely.
See how it does. Well, good. Well, Jennifer Michelle from Michelle Marketing Strategies and also host of Leading with Health podcast. I want to say thank you very much for being on the Health Biz podcast today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, David. It has been such a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Health Biz Podcast with me, David Williams, President of Health Business Group. I conduct in-depth interviews with leaders in healthcare business and policy. If you like what you hear, go ahead and subscribe on your favorite service. While you're at it, go ahead and subscribe on your second and third favorite services as well. There's more good stuff to come, and you won't want to miss an episode. If your organization is seeking strategy consulting services in healthcare, check out our website, healthbusinessgroup.com.